Hi there, and welcome back to Seasons of Life on 101.9 CITR FM, the radio show where we talk about people's seasons of life and the music that accompanied them. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Hukkamelem-speaking Musqueam people. I kunasi lam nama. Hello, welcome back to Seasons of Life, this lovely Tuesday night. Joining me is a very special guest. Hi, introduce yourself. Who are you?
I'm Kara Flug, and I'm happy to be here.
Great. So, how do we know each other? I think it's probably a good way to start off.
So, we kind of chatted about this before we started, so we both know that we're kind of comfortable with it. So, I met you when you were still in your final year at high school at Abbey Senior, and I was part of the support staff that came in to support the students and the staff after the two young ladies were, there was a stabbing incident at the school in the middle of the afternoon, and you and I met because you were one of the, first responders, students.
Yeah, and because of how we met, you have had a profound impact on my life.
That's so sweet.
Which is interesting, both in my view of traditional healing, indigenous healing. I learned so much from you in those areas, so I'm forever grateful for that. But also just trying to process what happened and all that stuff. So I want to read you a little thing about what you mean to me so that you kind of know.
Oh, sweet boy. Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, okay. So basically there was, for context, there were was a lot of press and a lot of challenges surrounding this event. And I was writing to process everything that happened not too long ago, actually, because I was just trying to like come to terms with it. So I said, as often happens in crisis, selfishness was overshadowed by selflessness, making my disdain for media easier to overlook. Corporations and local businesses putting aside revenue to donate enough stacks for the whole school for the year. Indigenous healers overstepping the history of cultural genocide connected to the Catholic Church, the same church where I was confirmed and baptized, to help me, a settler on their land, which was something I'll never be able to forget and something I never fully realized until this moment in my life. And I never fully realized, actually, I don't know if it was something that you thought about, but it's definitely something that, through all that I've learned of Indigenous history, having that healing at a Catholic church and all the stuff that was going on, is it something that, I mean, that's something that I was so grateful for, because I know that there's, I don't know if you personally felt it, but to have that those experiences overstepping the different cultures.
For me personally, as a woman, so I have indigenous ancestry, but I wasn't raised, I don't know what it's like to grow, to be judged or to be evaluated based on the color of my skin.
Right.
But in the 20 years that I've worked in Stalo territory, I have learned and grown so much. And I think I take it for granted sometimes how blessed I really am. And it's not lost on me, and I think that hearing it from your perspective makes me think, because I think I just, over the years, you get so involved in the work, sometimes you forget the symbolism like you're talking about. But, you know, the whole situation, the way it all came about, and the way that the community tried to step up and help, I think says a lot about Indigenous people in a way that we don't necessarily understand, and that there is so much forgiveness and so much desire to help people heal, that often those things that get in the way get forgotten about in moments of crisis. So I get what you're saying. Like, there was some, but it was also an opportunity for you guys, you and Emma, to heal, and anyone else who was a part of stuff, because there were other kids that were touched and other teachers and everyone who were touched by my presence. And I didn't really sometimes even do anything, just being there to help support all of you, right? But I think that it was a way to help you guys heal that wasn't going to be just a bunch of words thrown at you, you know, telling you you need to forgive, and you know, like, it was about helping you try to ground yourself and find some peace in that moment. Like, you guys were all so stressed and so shocked. And, you know, I just still remember, like, the wide-eyed look on your guys' face. I was actually thinking about it the other day. And the day we went into the school for you guys to do your first walk around before they opened the school back up. And I still remember you were wrapped in a blanket and you were so wide-eyed. And that for anybody who didn't have any context of the situation, they may have thought maybe you were excited, but there was so much anxiety and so much stress, and like I could see it all in your face. And I was happy to be able to provide some sort of grounding for you guys and be able to kind of give you some sort of touchstone to help you feel like that there was a possibility to grow. And I think that that's sometimes what people are drawn to who aren't Indigenous, to Indigenous culture.
And it's so tangible and local, because there are times now where if I'm stressed, I'll go walk around cedar trees, especially because you did the cedar. I don't know exactly what it's called.
Cedar brushing.
Yes, cedar brushing. And then there was a smudging ceremony as well. And all of that was so tangible and local. It was so nice to get away from, you know, maybe some of the more Western kind of healing practices. So
there was, you know, I don't know if I should probably even bring this up, but, you know, there was a, there was some pushback above your guys' heads.
Really?
For us wanting to do that smudging ceremony. Yeah.
Which is shocking to me. Or not shocking. Not, it's not shocking given the context of, you know, Canada. But it, it is shocking given the usefulness of, you know, differing views of wellness. So,
and that was, it was based on, there was some lawsuit in the news.
Really?
Yes. And they were all really quite worried that there was going to be some big drama with the smudging. And people were uncomfortable with it. I know.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting? I mean, it's very... it's kind of, I think, on my mind just because of everything that's been in the news this last year. So as we talk about that day, I can't help but think about it. And it came from the school board.
It's interesting because we were watching the convocation ceremony of my sister, and they used an Abbotsford senior scarf. The school board trustee used the Abbotsford senior scarf and superimposed Indigenous traditions on the scarf, and everyone was clapping as if it was something profound, but they didn't consult Indigenous people about the speech. And clearly they pushed back against Indigenous knowledge systems. And so we're sitting here talking about reconciliation, yet the actual tangible work that needs to be done is not getting done.
No. Before winter break, I'm sure you heard about it in the news because it was about Abbotsford. At Fraser, a teacher had sent on homework asking a kid to do five positives, right?
Of residential schools.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's such an example of privilege, because if you did the research, you would probably find numerous stories of elders, individuals that did not have a terribly negative experience, but in relation to what?
Exactly.
Right? Like in relation to other people being abused. The reality is that people were taken away and stolen to be made, all the Indian, as they said, the Indian taken away from them. And the point of all that is that, so here we have a school district, and our systems are so steeped in privilege that they don't see why, like what you were saying, the video of the convocation, the conversation that this teacher, like the teacher did, probably didn't even think about it. The teacher was probably like, oh, well, there's five, there's an elder that says there's five positive things. But it's like our privilege as white-skinned individuals allows us to kind of cherry-pick all those different things. And so it's like with that convocation, whoever came up with the idea of superimposing that, it's a great idea, but as a white man, he has the opportunity to go to the internet and choose a bunch of different things and claim them as some sort of symbolism and not feel any kind of understanding to how that might impact somebody who it does have some real heartfelt meaning to.
Yeah. And the weird thing, I mean, there's a lot of conversation around UBC, especially about land acknowledgements and whether it's seen as almost like a token or virtue signaling.
Oh, you mean
And
like when people say this land is.
not so much that it shouldn't occur, but more just that people will do the land acknowledgement, but then not do the work that's required to
Right.
really understand,
They're
the
just told, you need to say
implications.
this before everything you do.
Right, rather than taking the time to ask, So I do very much appreciate learning this from you and kind of starting a journey of personal decolonization and stuff along
Aww.
those lines. So I really appreciate you. The question has was, what's the music from a season in your life? And kind of how did you conceptualize this question?
So, are you wanting me to just choose a song or?
No, just with the when you were going to choose songs, how did you
Right.
kind of
So
think about it?
it was a lot lots of things. So it was either songs that I remember from that, like a particular song that I remember from that point in my life. So it has a memory or some sort of meaning, or it's a song actually from that point in my life that I still think of when I think of that time. And like I think I was sort of starting to say before we started talking about other stuff is kind of like I realize I see much of my life like a movie. You see songs as a soundtrack to your life when you stop and think about it. So a lot of these songs, it just like they'll like I have a song in here from Elvis, and the first song I was like 9. And I had to go to my grandparents every Saturday. I can't even remember why. I'm sure I could ask, but I'm not really that fussed. And they had Channel 12, and they lived in Surrey, and it must have been bad weather, so I wasn't outside playing. So I'd watch this movie because it was at a random time in the afternoon, and for like weeks it was an Elvis movie. And it's one of my first memories of. It's such a weird thing because when I think about it at the time, I didn't get it. I was just fascinated by Elvis.
Of
But
course.
now in hindsight, I see though that I was, because I was just a young girl, I had a crush on him. Like I was attracted to him. I was fascinated by the way he moved, by the way that he sounded, by his body language.
His devilish
And it's
hip
even.
thrusts.
Yeah, and when you think, when you hear about that stuff, like when they talk about him, I never really thought about it like that. But now as an adult, I do see that there was like, there was some raw sexuality that as a child I did not understand.
But your body knew, but your brain didn't, so or maybe
Exactly.
it.
So it's always kept this. So yeah, that's always sparked. So there's not one particular song. That's the one particular song I chose is one of my favorites. But there's not one particular reason because my mom and dad weren't Elvis fans. They weren't even Beatles fans. They were Stones fans.
Of course.
But that's another story too, because the Rolling Stones Sticky Fingers album has have you ever seen it?
Well, there's the one with the tongue. I don't know if that's Sticky
No,
Fingers.
that's a different. Sticky Fingers is the one where someone's standing there in their jeans, and then there's an actual zip.
Oh my gosh.
And then you pull the zip down, and they're wearing some tighty whities.
Oh my
Like
gosh.
you pull it apart. And I remember taking that album, and out of the because we had a like a you know like an ottoman that they kept all their records in, and I remember taking it out of there and going sitting around a corner and just playing with the zipper and pulling it down.
Oh, being a kid. See,
Oh, the joys of discovering sexuality and not having a clue what you're doing, but. Yeah, so I don't know. I never had anybody in my life who talked about Elvis ever. So that's kind of like how the mem that's probably a good example of how the memories in music, like how I make my memories.
Absolutely. I think now my generation has a much more pointed collection of songs that address sexuality,
Yeah, it's
whether
true.
it's Lady Gaga. I mean, I grew up with very sexual songs, undertones that I didn't realize until later. I mean, I stuck mainly with the older music as well.
We had
But
that as teenagers too. Like the kids were talking about WAP.
yeah.
Because even though it's a highly inappropriate song, I still like hip hop. I still like rap. So in my
Uh-huh.
you know, I like I and I I'm on Instagram and I follow Cardi B, so I always saw the WAP dance, right? So the kids were doing the WAP dance, and I, you know, they're not, they get that I'm not totally like, I'm not, you know, I'm just watching them do the dance. And so then someone goes, "Oh, that's the worst song." I'm like, when I was 14, 15, and 16, so in the very late 80s, early 90s, like there was the Two Live Crew song, "Let's Get Butt Naked," and "Fuck," and then there was Ice-T's. Oh no, that was Ice-T. Two Live Crew was, oh, I can't remember what it was, but they had horribly songs like that. Then there was the boom boom boom, let's go back to my room so we can do it all night, like all sorts of radio friendly song, like that was a radio friendly song. So yeah, I think people forget, you know, like it's just more, I think for your guys's generation and the generation millennials ahead of you, like everything's just, where did you fall onto the millennial
No, I'm the top end of Gen Z.
generation Y or
Gen
whatever it's called?
Z,
Gen
but
Z.
I don't eat Tide Pods for our listeners.
You don't like the blue raspberry flavor?
No. I mean, I watched in disgust. Although it does look, they do look tasty. They should make Tide Pods
It's kind
canned.
of funny because they actually kind of do, don't they?
Like, what are you gonna, like, you have
To a
these.
small child, that would look probably very appealing.
Well, I mean, yeah, you have these orange little, like, pot. Like, I want to chew on that.
And they're squishy.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
I
Anyways.
get it. I get it.
So, we're gonna play If I Can Dream,
Yes.
the live version by Elvis Presley.
This is the best, in my opinion, one of the best versions that he's done.
Okay, perfect. So I'll play that right now, and we're gonna play an ad after this, and we'll be right back here on Seasons of Life.
There must be lights burning brighter somewhere. Got to be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Understanding sometime, strong winds of promise that will blow away the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining on everyone, tell me why. Answers gonna come somehow. Out there in the dark, there's a beckoning candle, yeah. And while I can think, while I can talk, while I can stand, while I can walk, while I can dream, oh, please let my dream come true.
Good. Good night.
So that was If I Can Dream by Elvis Presley. We're going to go right into our next song, which is Tulsa Time by Don Williams. Thank you for listening to Seasons of Life, and we'll be right back with this week's guest.
Everybody Is In provides relief to the COVID-19 crisis by delivering goods and services to residents of the downtown East Side. And we need donations. Right now, we are looking for protective personal equipment, sanitation supplies, non-perishable food, and hygiene items. You can email everybodyisin2020donations@gmail.com to make a donation, or go to dtesresponse.ca for more information. Everybody Is In is funded by Downtown Eastside Response through diversity, arts, music, and entertainment.
Dave Radio, Fridays at noon on CITR.
Wow, wow, Dave, you're so sway. Oh, Dave, I like your shave.
Hi, we're back with Kara Pflug, our lovely guest. So, tell us about Tulsa Time.
So, I'm not an overly huge country music fan. I do enjoy country music, but growing up, my mom and dad, not when I was really young, When I was really young, they listened to a lot of like Cat Stevens and Linda Ronstadt and Billy Joel's Glass Houses. That's an album that still sticks with me. But as I got a little older, like towards the mid 80s, they really started getting into country music.
Gotta love
it. I was about 10. And my Nana and Papa were into country music. Like my whole family was into country music. And Don Williams was a huge, my mom and dad were a huge fan of Don Williams. And that was my first music, like that was my first concert. They took us to see Don Williams at the Northwest Washington Fair in Linden.
Oh, we would go there all the time.
Yes. I love that fair.
So good.
And I had been to see, I think I'd seen the Allman Brothers there with my Nana and Papa years before. But this was like, we had tickets and we were like, my mom and dad were excited to go. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, and I think the other piece that I really attach is why I picked this song too. I liked it because this is just one of the songs that I remember watching them dance to. But, you know, country music and that kind of dancing music reminds me a lot of my family. You know, like whenever they had social stuff, there was always dancing. Like there was always singing. There was always laughing. There was always talking. There was always lots of interacting, you know, with my dad's side of the family. And my mom and dad loved to dance, even just at home. And, you know, I come from, like, the Pflug side of my family is a family of storytellers. So I've always wondered if that was where that attraction to country music came from as well. I don't know. I mean, life is so different now. You know, like, I listened to way different music in my 40s than my parents did when they were in their 40s.
In what way?
Well, I think I still listen to a lot of pop music. And I still, and I think that we have music around us way more. And it's everywhere. And I just don't think, I think that, I don't know, maybe it's just my, I hadn't thought about, but I've, I guess I always had this impression that my mom and dad kind of stopped listening and turned to talk radio.
Yeah.
You know, not that podcasts are a bad thing, but they were, there weren't podcasts, you know, like it was the CBC radio talking about whatever.
I think there's, it's weird because, well, I started listening to CBC as well because I love hearing these like stories that they tell locally, which is great. But then at the same time, it, I think it allows for that to be the background sound and then music to be the event, if that's what it changes to. And I always want to buy a vinyl or like a turntable because the whole album you listen to start to finish, it's a lot more. And I do that on Spotify too, but it's not really the same with how accessible it is. So I don't know if maybe it's a shift towards music being an event and less as a background. I'm not sure.
You know what? That makes sense because even before I got, like when I remember that when I first got my iPod, I had an, I have an iPod mini still.
Really?
Yes. And it's unfortunate that I dropped it because there's a little ding in it because it would have been like, it's in great condition.
You could,
and when I first started using, even just then, so that was like what? I got when I turned 30, so 2005. And I was still listening to albums then, but then I got one of those shuffles. And that started me on the one shots, you know? Like I just started listening to one shots, and then I got into the radio, and I don't listen, even myself, I don't listen to albums all the way through anymore, actually, when I think about it.
Yeah.
God, I'm talking shit. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
No, I honestly, music and art is so personal, and the fun, the lovely thing about music is it all impacts us differently, whether you have, you know, background in it or not. Like it is gonna impact your feelings and the way that you interact with the world. In my eyes, maybe because I'm like a little bit hippie, but
maybe I'm just very like, you know, I like to think that I'm a really like open-minded thinker, but I mean, you know, I guess I'm not as open as I think I am. Like, I think it's not that I'm closed off to stuff. I think I'm just one of those people that where like, I find something that I like and I like beat it to death, whether it's like a sweatshirt, a sandwich, a song.
Yeah.
Like I'll eat it every day for 3 years.
You can say that you're doing it for sustainability because you don't need much to survive. You just, you beat this sweater until it doesn't work anymore. And you know, you're happy. My friend, she was talking to me a while back and she's like, yeah, I just, you know, make quinoa with salsa and cheese. And it's my, she called it her depression meal.
Yeah.
That's
your depression meal?
Quinoa with cheese.
Sounds so healthy.
Cheese and it's good. Like pasta sauce, cheese and quinoa. It's like a little pizza. A healthy pizza.
Oh, really?
A hippie pizza.
Oh, my God. What happened to cookies? What happened to eating raw cookie dough when you're depressed?
Because when I buy, like, snack food when I'm depressed, I will eat the family-sized bag of chips, and I'm sitting there covered in the crumbs of the all-dressed chips, wondering what I'm doing with my life, and I get all sick and gross. So quinoa makes me feel a little bit, like I have
makes
a little bit
like
more together.
Healthy?
Yeah. For the viewer, our listener, we have video that we communicate over, but you can't see us, so that's the good thing, because we can both look gross. And
yeah, I have no eye makeup on.
I have a big zit on my forehead. Also, no eye makeup on. That's okay. How do we even get down here? I think we have Brian Adams next.
It's me. I mean, this is the conversations with me. This is what I'm like in general.
Oh, me too. I have ADHD, okay. So I'm all over
so
the place.
So we're just as bad. We're bad, 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 bad.
Or good.
So the next person, Brian Adams.
Uh-huh.
So this one comes from... I'm just trying to pull the video back up on the screen. I don't know what I was doing. Brian, so he's not really... I wouldn't say I dislike his music. I'm attached to him as a Canadian artist.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in high school, I had a core group of girlfriends. There was a few, like about five or six of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't always make the best decisions. And so I have some memories, though, of like when we would skip school and we'd all be together and we would play this song. And for some reason, and I'm sure if I thought back on it, it was the term 69 that probably got everybody like, you know, like, oh, we're saying 69. But we would just sing this song. And then it started a love affair with Brian Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been to numerous concerts of his,
uh-huh.
And I followed him on social media, and so this song brings back a lot of. It's not quite my age range. It probably came out about 6 or 7 years before we started liking it,
uh-huh.
as teenagers.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely takes me back to that. Probably 14, 15, 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, which is an interesting thing about music, too, is that, you know, it's in a lot of ways timeless. I've bonded over songs from the 60s with my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like, I mean, Joni Mitchell, one of many that I mean, previous podcasts talk about. But yeah, it's amazing. So we'll listen to Brian Adams, Summer of 69. Also a good part of growing up for me, too. So...
right.
I'm so excited. So we'll play Summer of 69, play a couple ads, and we'll be right back.
I got my first real six string, bought it at the Five and Dime. Played it till my fingers bled. Was a summer of 69. Me and some guys from school had a band and we tried. Never get far. Oh, and I look back now. The summer seemed to last forever.
Welcome back. That was The Summer of 69 by the lovely Bryan Adams. Now, we actually have been already talking for like 2 or 3 hours, right?
About everything. It's been a very frenetic conversation, to be totally.
It's been a path, a journey, a lot of switchbacks.
Yep, love it.
We're going to get to the peak eventually, though.
Yeah. Can you imagine if we were drinking? It would just be insane. We'd be here for hours.
Yes. Honestly, I'll just get some wine, come back, and like be here till like 12. It truly. Okay, so in the interest of time, you guys wouldn't believe all the things we talked about already.
Oh, so many.
I feel like I shouldn't even mention this because you guys are going to get jealous. But anyways, so we're on to our next song, which is Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton. Do you want to talk about it now and then we can play it?
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about it. So this album in general is amazing. Mm-hmm. I discovered this album when I was in the 12th grade. Mm-hmm. These Unplugged. And but Tears in Heaven really speaks to some losses that I had. So the week before I started grade 12, so in 1992, mm-hmm. a friend of mine, two of my friends were in a really bad car accident by Musselwhite. So mm-hmm. it's all built up now. But in 1992, it was still a very rough 2-lane road. Mm-hmm. And the ravine was still open across from the cemetery. Mm-hmm. And so they went flying over the ravine. And it was a really intense time because there was a really core group of my friends. And he ended up passing away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my first real loss mm-hmm. as a young person with somebody who wasn't family. Mm-hmm. A family member. And it is very different for young people because that's their first, like you and I were talking about at the very beginning, you know, mm-hmm. like getting, you don't always get that sense of mortality when you're a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then a few years later, when I was 21, two more friends of ours were in another car accident. They were coming down because Burger King at Whatcom
mm-hmm.
used to be the only place open.
Really?
After the bar, yeah. So people would go down to, it was only, the drive-thru was open 24 hours.
Love that Burger King.
Yeah, I did too. And then, so that's where everybody went to when I was in my 20s. But mm-hmm. they lost control there. Mm-hmm. And my friend who was driving was killed instantly. Mm-hmm. And then the friend and the passenger was in a coma for 3 months.
Wow. And did they pass away as well?
No, he's still alive. And he's had, you know, a pretty successful life. There's been lots of other things that have gone along with it because he's got a permanent brain injury.
Mm.
But when I was in grade 12, I wrote a play about my friend Dave who had died before we started. And we played this song, Tears in Heaven, in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've gotten older, it's just always kind of been the song that always touches me. And he wrote, Eric Clapton wrote the song about his own son who died. His son fell out a window when he was quite little, and then he wrote the song about.
So how did you find that music, in particular Eric Clapton's song, helped you process death?
I don't know. For me, I think that when I feel that kind of sadness, like I don't, whenever I've lost somebody, I do get that feeling like we all get, like I can't, that shock, that remorse, like that person's never coming back.
Mm-hmm.
But, it doesn't typically stay for me. I'm very blessed, and I'm not sure why I've been blessed with it, to be able to process loss in a fairly healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what Tears in Heaven represents for me is just the fact that I know people aren't gone. Like, I believe that people are still with us.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in spirituality. I believe that, you know, people come to visit us.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Tears in Heaven just makes me feel a little bit of a connection to that afterlife without being all hairy-fairy about it.
So did you find... Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's like there's some tears in heaven. There's another song that Mariah Carey does with Boys to Men.
Mm.
I just heard it and then I lost it. So I couldn't even tell you what it was, but it kind of does the same when I see you again, or like that Puff Daddy song that he did.
Yeah.
With the, police.
Right. Yeah.
Right. I'll see you again. Mm. So those songs, they're not too sappy. You know, like they're not too emotional. They're kind of logical and have a real connection to the fact that the person's not here and they're not crying. Over, you know what? Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, it aligns with your sense of closure that some songs... I mean, each artist, I think, will relate to grief the way that they know how. And each person, I mean, there are groups of people who, you know, relate to grief similarly. So it's helpful to find someone that's coping in a similar way to human realities, whether it be breakups or death. And which is and that's what someone told me. They said, you know, there wouldn't be this much art if it was easy to describe things like love and loss. You know,
okay, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, so they were saying, you know, we have all these different ways that we all process it. That's why there's all this art, because we're all trying to process it, you know, in our own ways and getting help in doing so. So
I like that.
Yeah, I really liked it too. So on that note, we'll listen to Tears in Heaven by Eric Clapton, and then we'll be right back on Seasons of Life.
CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from The Real Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
So that was Tears in Heaven. We'll be right back with our lovely guest. And up next is Mr. Cab Driver. Again, I hope you guys are doing well. And yeah, here's Mr. Cab Driver by Lenny Kravitz. was Mr. Cab Driver. So, Kara, why'd you choose this one?
Another influence in high school is, so there was, I had a core group of girlfriends, but we had a big core group of guy friends as well. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were into 70s classic rock. Mm-hmm. And even though obviously Lenny Kravitz wasn't classic rock.
Yeah.
His album, and he didn't get really popular until the album after this one. I can't remember what it's called, but that's where he sings that, "Are You Gonna Go My Way?" Mm-hmm. But some guy friends of mine, one in particular, his name is Jason, introduced me to this song. Uh-huh. And it still means something to me, because especially in the, you know, environment we're talking about right now, like with Black Lives Matter and what mm-hmm. just happened the other day. And I've always had a connection to like the civil rights movement and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. there's a lot more of a political connection to me with this song.
Yeah.
And I've always felt it.
Yeah. So that's Mr. Cab Driver?
Yeah. Because, you know, there's this one song where he goes, because it was like, "Mr. Cab Driver won't stop to pick me up."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
"He don't like dreads. He think we're all..." I can't remember what he says. "Mr. Cab Driver, fuck you." I'm sure that's the other reason I liked it so much. But
it's good social commentary, too.
Yes.
You know, which is, I think, great. And also for context, what happened the other day, we're referring to the...
the insurgents.
Yeah, the insurgents on the Capitol buildings in the U.S. Also, a lot of relations were made to what if this was a group of black protesters, how would police have handled it?
Or how we handled the Mi'kmaq thing on the East Coast.
Yeah, or what Sowetan... Yeah, that one was insane.
Yes, and that's 2021. Just the fact that we're still arguing about whether or not people should be able to have access to fresh water should say a lot to us as Canadians.
There's a problem here. Her voice just don't sound right. But I left myself on an answering machine. Said I'm back in town tonight. I feel I step out of the wilderness, all squint-eyed and confused. But even babies raised by wolves, they know exactly when they've been used. See, when it starts to fall apart, man, it really falls apart. Like boots or hearts, or when they start, they really fall apart. Ooh, fingers and toes, fingers and toes. 40 things we share, but 41 if you include. Don't care. Now you block off most of Main Street for your faith parade. Well, everyone in town now, they probably all agree I'm lying in the bed I made. See when it starts to fall apart, man, it really falls apart. Like boots or hearts or when they start. Well, fall apart. See when it starts to fall apart, man. hearts are when they start, they really fall apart. Well, fall apart. My time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test. Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Don't wanna be a richer man.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes. It's gonna have to be a different man. Sides, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't tell them to grow up on out of it.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Where's your shame? You've left us up to her next event. Time may change me, but you can't twist time. Strange fascination.
So that was Changes by the lovely David Bowie. I remember when he passed away, I think I was in grade 12. Quite sad. But why did you choose this song? Obviously, were there a lot of changes in your life when you were listening it? Or?
I mean, I've always really liked David Bowie.
Right.
When I was younger, just because it wasn't a part of the zeitgeist yet when I was a kid, not as much as it is now, I always found it unusual, you know, like, I never really understood all the gossip, you know, because like I told you, I don't know if we're talking about this off there, I love, like, my dessert is, like, celebrity gossip and all that stuff. There's always gossip about him and Mick Jagger and all the other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I always really loved the, like, that he was such an amazing
musician. We just played Velvet Dinosaurs, and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum!
Really?
Really? Tell! Tell me, Master Tommy! I hate you, I hate you!
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Measure things by good and bad and time frames and stuff like that, because we're all constantly changing, we're all constantly evolving. So that's really one of the more simple songs that I chose. Like, that one was really primarily about just my attachment to David Bowie and his weirdness when it was still weird.
Right.
I mean, I don't think his weirdness would be weird now.
No. I mean, he's such a trailblazer. And
yes.
Being able to, you know, be a bit more androgynous or play around with makeup and stuff along those lines.
And not care.
No. And it's people like that that I feel like David Bowie or even Madonna at the time, but Lady Gaga, and then Miley Cyrus when she was on The Wrecking Ball, like all these different things are just cultural shifts, you know?
Yep. Has there been any of the new ones lately?
I think Miley was the probably most recent one. Also, well, okay, I guess Cardi B.
Oh yeah, with WAP. That was a big. That's a big.
Yeah,
That's a fairly sexual song for a woman to sing. I mean, I get that compared to Mosey being men who talk like that.
Well, I think it was a good space for her to show the hypocrisy in music for women and how they express sex. And desire. So Kara, we have Anxiety up next, so we'll play that, and then we'll come back, then discuss our last song, closing remarks, and we'll play our last song.
Okay.
Sound good? Okay.
Cool. Sound good.
So this is Anxiety by Black Eyed Peas.
Giving to it, bro. Gotta get myself back now. Gotta can't let my mind be tied. My enemy is my own. Got to find my inner wealth. Grasp a hold of my thoughts. I can't get caught. I can't give in to it now. Emotions are trapped in on lock. Got my brain stuck. Going through the motions. Only I know what's up. I'm filled up with pain. Try to gain my sanity. Everywhere I turn, it's a dead end in front of me. With nowhere to go, gotta shake this anxiety. Got me feeling strange. Paranoia took over me. And it's weighing me down. And I can't run any longer. Y'all knees to the ground. I don't fear none of my enemies. And I don't fear bullets from Uzis. I've been dealing with something that's worse than these. I'm making fall to your knees. And that's anxiety, sane and the insane rivalry, paranoid brought me to my knees. Lord, please, 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 take away my anxiety. Sane and the insane rivalry, paranoid brought me to my knees. Lord, please, 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 take away my anxiety.
So that was Anxiety by the Black Eyed Peas. Now, can you give us some insight of why you chose this one?
So this album, Ella Funk, mm-hmm. I discovered this album when I had a job when I was finishing the last part of my university. And so, but this particular song is not the kind of music that I would typically listen to. Mm-hmm. But what I like so much about this song is that in my adulthood, you know, I've had some real struggles with mental health. And this song, I just always, when I listen to it, it feels like anxiety to me. And mm-hmm. I just always appreciate things in a really raw, natural way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this song speaks to me. It's like, I don't fear my enemies, which isn't true, but I don't have a lot of enemies, but
I wouldn't guess that you did.
I don't like a lot of conflict, mm-hmm. you know, but my anxiety and my depression, you know, have paralyzed me.
Mm-hmm.
And they have kept me from moving forward in my life. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has been at the cost and at the, because of other people.
Mm.
And in particularly romantic relationships.
Mm.
And so this song is just, it's one of the few songs on this list that actually really, I haven't listened to it in a long time,
uh-huh.
but, that when I was listening to it frequently or since it came out. So I probably since 2005, mm-hmm. 2006. And, it's definitely been a song that I can relate to. I would say I relate to it.
So what does it look like to you? Like what parts, you know, like how does it feel anxiety or what is this bringing out in you?
Well, for me, anxiety has always felt like, you know, when you've had like too much coffee,
mm-hmm.
and it's your insides are like bouncing and flying all around and mm-hmm. you know, you can't think straight and, you know, you're worried about what's happening. And so what happens for me is my anxiety keeps me from leaving.
Mm. Mm.
Like it keeps me from doing anything.
Right.
It keeps me from socializing. It keeps me from dating. Mm-hmm. The only thing that it's really hadn't for many, many years kept me from was working. But in the last 5 years, that's changed a lot.
Right.
And so it's hard to say what my anxiety looks like. And I think that's part of what I like about this song.
Well, it's putting a face to a name. And these are names that are more abstract, and that's the challenge with mental health, is that if you can pinpoint what people are feeling and you can do it through this type of art, it's very helpful. And that's, so we're leading on to the end.
Last song.
Yes. And what is the last song?
It is the Bare Naked Ladies, It's All Been Done.
So you chose as your last song. What's the reasoning behind that?
So there's a couple of things. So Bare Naked Ladies has like my sister and a best friend. Mm-hmm. It's a song between the three of us, particularly my friend and I, Cindy and I. It's always been one of the songs that we love to sing and stuff like that. But when I went to, in 1997 to 98, I was in Australia mm-hmm. for a year.
Yeah.
And when I was in Brisbane, we had the opportunity to see the Bare Naked Ladies at a nightclub.
Right.
And so that was really cool for all of us because it had been our, you know, like we're in Australia and we're going to sing the Bare Naked Ladies songs and shit.
Right,
like that.
Right,
and
right,
then,
right.
And then, well, so I've always loved them. And then this song, I think, is really, I mean, obviously it's not in the time frame of when I went to Australia 20 years ago, but it speaks to a lot of, this particular song speaks to a lot of where I'm at in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, when I started to struggle with my depression and my anxiety, I got very, like you were saying, very nihilistic, very dark, and lots of, you know, lots and lots of ways, and, you know, really started to isolate myself and started, and I had a bit of an attitude mm-hmm. and I needed to learn to humble myself, and I needed to learn to, and so these are things that I did, but I still wasn't losing that attitude. I still mm-hmm. had this cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
And what this song talks a lot about when you listen to the lyrics is like, you hear someone being like, well, you know, I've done that. And it's like, well, let's do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I'm kind of at right now in my life, where I'm starting to see that, you know, the mistakes that I've made
mm-hmm.
that have hurt other people, the things that I have said and done, the choices that I've made in these last 10 years as I've kind of been struggling with my mental health, even though I've asked for compassion, it doesn't excuse some of the choices and some of the words that I've shared myself. You know,
right.
And I think what this song kind of sums up for this particular season in my life is that, you know, there's still a lot more,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's all about perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you've done that, but have you done it this way? And
mm-hmm.
yeah, you have been really hurt, but that doesn't mean you're going to get hurt again.
Mm-hmm.
You yeah. know, like, there are still hopes, there are still dreams, there are still possibilities. Like mm-hmm. my life, I started to get to this point where I was like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to live like this for the next 25 years and then die. And
yeah.
like,
yeah.
And like I've been saying to you throughout the show, and I don't know what we've talked about on record and what we haven't, but you know, when we've talked about, you know, this last year being a real leveling for me.
Yeah.
And that's what it has helped me get to.
Right.
And I think that this song is just kind of a fun way. And also it's a fun way to end things off. The Bare Naked Ladies are a fun group of people to listen to. It's like listening to like Great Big Sea, you know, like
right.
it's kind of folky, but
yeah.
not really.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, I hope that that's how this song comes across.
That's a hole that a lot of people get into. And it's, I think it really is in these personal reckonings where we need to practice, you know, this compassion for ourselves, that we really do have that change, right? And I think the reason why I'd say you probably won't end up like that forever is because you asked yourself, you know, is this good? You know, and the people who end up like that forever never ask themselves that. Is this how I want to live?
Oh, that's what I've been trying to tell myself, right?
Right, yeah.
Like, you haven't screwed it all up just because you're 45 and you're not where you thought you were supposed to be at 45. Even mm-hmm. though I've never been one of those kind of women, it's mm-hmm. just, it's inevitable, you know, like, yeah. unless I live in a bubble mm-hmm. that I'm not going to hear and feel these expectations from society.
Right.
But what had happened is I was, you know, struggling with my mental health as I started to internalize them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they became my own.
Mm-hmm.
And it just added to what I was already struggling with.
Yeah. And I think that's where the work of David Bowie and other artists that we've listened to is like really helpful, because you're able to transcend societal expectations to an extent. But then also I think with other songs like this, it's trying to recontextualize, okay, it's not the end of the world. My life might not be how I expected it to be at this age, but there are other things that I'm doing that are really rewarding.
Yes.
And there's hope in the future, which is so easy to say, but really hard to tell ourselves sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm nodding. I keep forgetting I can't just nod. I have to say, yes, 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 you're right. She's nodding as I'm talking. She's active listening to me.
Yeah, she's doing a really good job. We're making eye contact.
Leaning forward.
Thank you so much, Kara, for being our... You're welcome.
It's been so much
I've had a blast, and I'm really excited to, you know, hear the feedback from this episode.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear what they
what
think.
What the people say. Not many people comment.
What the people say. What the people say.
Yeah, honestly, I think we have 5 listeners, so if you're listening, thank you.
Thank you.
Stay safe out there.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah, at CITRSOL on Twitter. Yeah, it's been great. So here's It's All Been Done by the Bare Naked Ladies. Stay safe out there. And yeah, hopefully you guys have a great rest of your week. We'll be back next Tuesday and with another great, lovely guest. So have a good one. This is the Bare Naked Ladies.